Chris Johnson, TSN Hockey Insider for more. Chris, it's Friday. We love our Fridays with Chris. How's it going?
I know. Happy Friday. We always get the best day to do these chats. I've never been in a bad mood when I'm talking to you guys.
I know. It's always a really chipper hit. It's good. We were just talking about David Kampf, his status. Keefe said he's going to be a game time decision tonight. Do you have any more insight as to how he's doing?
No, I mean, I think, you know, typically when you hear the game time decision, it's just down to how he feels when he gets to the rink. I mean, sometimes some of these injuries, you know, the teams obviously want to be careful with. I think when you're in the Leafs' position, even as important as David Kampf has been to the success they've had, that you know, there's no reason to be risking anything. So, you know, probably be in David's call when he gets to the Shark Tank and whatever 10 hours, whenever the game is. And so, you know, that's just kind of where it stands now.
Joseph Woll's going to get the start tonight. How much of this do you think is managing Jack Campbell's workload, and how much of it do you think is them just trying to get a peek at Joseph Woll to see if maybe he can be a legitimate backup here long term?
Well, the best part about it is you've got, you know, you can sort of kill those two birds with the one stone. I mean, certainly I think the organization is very, you know, conscious of the fact that Jack Campbell's had to play more this year than he would have, you know, had Peter Mrazek been healthy, you know, for the first 2 months of the season. And so they've taken steps in terms of limiting his reps at practice. But, you know, ideally you don't want to play in so many games. And you know, the nice part about it for Sheldon Keefe is, you know, Joseph Woll, you know, did pitch a shutout the last game. You know, he won the first game in Buffalo. And so, you know, I think that it gives you the ability to throw him in there and understand that he's finding his own way as an NHL goaltender. And so I think it's kind of a win-win scenario for the Leafs. You know, this is the first time they've been able to do it when it's not a back-to-back situation. So when really the schedule didn't thrust it upon them, I think they're just, you know, trying to be prudent and careful with Jack's workload. And, you know, that makes sense. I mean, let's face it, this has been a tremendous run for them. But, you know, the games in you know, April and May count a lot more than the ones that are being played right now. And I think that they want to do everything they possibly can to make sure Jack Campbell's performing at his best once the playoffs get here.
Yeah, the Leafs are waiting on a couple guys to return from injury. Mrazek, obviously, down with a groin injury. Mikheyev with a thumb injury. When do you think that we'll see these guys back in the lineup?
It seems like it's going to be a little bit. I think Mrazek, you know, is trending towards maybe the end of next week, give or take. But, you know, they're going to want to be careful there, too, right? He had a groin injury early in the year, came back and played, and then, you know, had to miss this significant amount of time again with the same injury. And so, because of the nature of the goaltending position, going down into the splits a lot and sliding around the crease, I mean, you've got to be really careful when it comes to knees or groins. And so, you know, I think that, you know, especially if it goes well with Joseph Woll, I mean, that they've got the benefit that, you know, they're not pushing him back here in an urgent situation. You know, even like we saw last year where Frederik Andersen was out injured, Jack Campbell had some injuries. I mean, they were almost, I think, had to roll the dice a little bit more because of the circumstances. But, you know, with so many points in the bank that they don't need to do that. You know, with Mikheyev, it's just all about handling the puck and shooting and those things. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, he had that wrist injury, you know, 2 years ago when he got his tendons cut by a skate. And so he's kind of familiar with this rehab. But the good part about that is he has been skating for quite some time. So I don't think that conditioning will be an issue when it comes back for him. But, you know, I don't know what the timetable is. It doesn't seem like it's one where we're going to see him here in the next couple games or anything like that.
In conversation with Chris Johnson, TSN Hockey Insider, we asked Cheryl Pounder this question the other day. We're at the American Thanksgiving milestone, and this is typically when trade talk somewhat starts to pile up and starts to pick up a little bit here. But, you know, what do you think is more of a bigger priority for the Maple Leafs this year? Would it be getting another top four defenseman, or would it be getting a player to go in the top six in the left wing?
I think ideally you're probably looking at a left winger. You know, we'll see how things go. Obviously, the health of the team might change that priority as it gets closer to March 21st in the trade deadline. But, you know, where we're at today, I think the Leafs are really comfortable with their blue line. I mean, they basically have seven guys that they, you know, that on any given night can compose their top six. You know, they've been able to move players in and out of the lineup on that bottom pairing without really any noticeable drop-off. And, you know, a real nice story this season, I think, has been the emergence of Rasmus Sandin and even Timothy Liljegren. You know, those guys have put in some good minutes for them and, you know, clearly taken a step in their development to where they can be trusted. And, you know, I think the Leafs top four, it was pretty good last year too. I mean, adding TJ Brody as a free agent 2 years ago, you know, has helped. You know, obviously the Jake Muzzin trade was part of that. I mean, it was a little rough out of the gates, you know, in that top four with just some of the performance of the players, but I don't think that's a personnel issue. And as we're getting deeper into the year, I'm sure they're comfortable. Like I could see, them adding a depth defenseman, maybe, you know, someone like of the Zach Bogosian mold, you know, maybe a more rugged defenseman where you could play a different looking bottom pair, especially when you get into a playoff series. So, you know, I could see them making two additions, but, you know, the bigger need is probably finding, you know, another left wing option. And, you know, maybe that's Mikheyev. I mean, that's probably what management's hoping for at this point, that when Mikheyev gets back and healthy, you know, we even saw prior to him getting injured in training camp, you know, he did see some minutes on the power play and played higher up the lineup than he has previously during his time with the Leafs. And so, you know, it's always possible that answer lies within. But otherwise, I do think that's their top target, is just to get the line settled and, you know, maybe have another option to play alongside Auston Matthews specifically, because that's kind of been a rotating spot so far this season.
The answer lies within. I like that. That's some real Friday wisdom there, CJ.
Doing my best.
The Vancouver situation, we'll start going around the league a little bit here, seems to be getting worse and worse out west there. I was reading reports out of practice yesterday that there was some confusion over a drill. JT Miller heard yelling, "We don't even know what we're doing." Do you get the sense that maybe Benning doesn't even have the authority to make a coaching change or a trade if he wants to?
I definitely have that sense. You know, I don't know it 100% to be true, but, you know, the Canucks have certainly, you know, asked around about some potential coaching candidates to replace Travis Green, and so far that move hasn't been made. And so it's hard not to connect the dots. You know, I think what's hardest for what's going on in Vancouver is there really isn't one answer here, right? It's not, you know, I don't see this as an isolated coaching issue. You know, I think it's probably a bigger issue actually for what Jip Benning's done, but for whatever reason, ownership hasn't removed him from his job. And so, you know, that there isn't a simple solution there. And you're right, the frustrations are boiling over. You know, even JT Miller, you know, had a comment when he was meeting reporters on Zoom earlier in the week, you know, just like he said something to the effect he doesn't know if everyone is on the same page or trying. And mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that one thing, you know, as much as fans of a team hate losing, it's way harder on the people that work inside the walls, that are in it every day, that are trying to find solutions and not getting there. You know, obviously the expectations around the Canucks were so much higher ahead entering this year compared to where they are now in the standings. And so that takes a toll on everyone. And I think that's what we're seeing spill over now. I can't imagine they're going to go much longer without making some kind of change. I just feel, even from a business perspective, I mean, they're damaging the brand of the team, you know, this is a situation like that old saying, right? You either got to sell winning or you got to sell hope. And I don't see, they're certainly not winning, and I don't see a lot of hope in kind of their plan. And, you know, I've said this before, I can't remember if it was on your show, but it reminds me where the Leafs were at when Brendan Shanahan came in. And if you remember, you know, what he did is he literally cleaned house. He fired something like 17 scouts, the whole front office, coaching staff, and, you know, really laid out a plan for how he was going to get the team back to respectability. And I know they haven't had the ultimate success in the playoffs, but, you know, they've followed that plan and seen it through. I mean, I see Vancouver in a similar spot. I mean, it's not that they don't have good players. It's not that everyone there doesn't, you know, can't be good in the right situation, but I think something's broken with the way the organization's functioning, and they have to take some major steps to address it, or else it's going to get worse before it gets better.
CJ, do you think that maybe, like, the lack of urgency here by ownership, you could even somewhat link in Jeff Molson with the Canadiens, is kind of due to the pandemic and their unwillingness to spend additional money if they don't have to?
Well, absolutely. I mean, these owners have been writing checks for the 2 years that the pandemic happened, and, you know, it's only these last 2 months where they've been able to sell tickets and actually generate revenue again. And so, you know, there are some businesses or some individual franchises where that's a bigger problem than others. You know, really no different than the restaurants around the city right now, or the bars, you know, that have only been able to operate at partial capacity or, you know, for half of the time since this pandemic began almost 2 years ago. And so, you know, I think that's definitely playing into some of the decisions. It's hard to pay someone not the coach or not to be your GM when you have to go out and, you know, write checks to get the replacement. You know, I think in Vancouver's situation specifically, you know, to me, you'd have to be bringing someone experienced in. If you're making a GM change or even a coaching change, I don't see turning the keys over to someone inexperienced. And when you're getting experience, it's going to cost more money. And so I do think that's a part of what's going on both Montreal and Vancouver and probably other places too. I mean, ideally, you know, the Leafs are still paying Mike Babcock, right? I mean, ideally, you don't really want to be doing that if you're an organization. But, you know, at a certain point, we're talking about, you know, a couple million dollars, which is easy for me to say, sitting here on my couch. And I don't have to write that check. But you know, these are billion-dollar businesses in some case, you know, especially for the richest teams in the league. And so I think you got to spend money to make money in certain cases, and that might be you know, where those owners end up, you know, landing if things don't turn around soon.
TSN Hockey Insider Chris Johnson on the phone. Obligatory Olympic talk, CJ, when we have you on.
I love it.
Yeah. Our colleague, Pierre LeBrun, it's hilarious for me to call him my colleague because I'm pretty sure Pierre doesn't even know who I am. So that makes it funny.
No, he came on our show.
Oh, yeah. You're right. He had a piece where he interviewed Team Canada GM Doug Armstrong yesterday. And in it, Armstrong said that he's building a team that can compete in an NHL-style game, not a team that can compete in an all-star game. And he went on to talk about physical play and special team abilities, which I think is great to build a balanced lineup like that. Would you say this all but should guarantee Marner a spot on the Olympic team?
I would say he's as close to a guarantee without maybe being fully guaranteed. But, you know, the fact that Mitch has turned his season around after a bit of a, you know, slow start by his standards has certainly helped. I mean, look, I think we can safely say that Team Canada's top two lines are going to involve, you know, a version of McDavid, McKinnon, Marner, and then, you know, probably Crosby, Marchand, maybe Bergeron. I don't know if they'll relink that line, but I think, you know, some version of those six players will probably compose the top two lines. And then, you know, some of the harder decisions are down the lineup because, you know, you're debating, do you want a Mark Scheifele or John Tavares to play on your fourth line? I mean, in the NHL, these guys are logging huge minutes. They play power play. But, you know, for Team Canada, when you're making that decision, you know, that you're sort of envisioning them in a different role. And I think that that's how guys like Tom Wilson or even Zach Hyman, you know, even Andrew Mangiapane, who kills penalties in Calgary in addition to scoring all those goals. I mean, I think that that's how they've entered the Team Canada conversation. Is they're each having good seasons, but they also, you know, can potentially, you know, kill penalties and do other specialty things that the team's going to need, because it isn't an all-star team. You're not building four first lines to score. You know, I think you need some kind of identity there. And you know, the good news for Team Canada is they've done this a lot, right? Like Doug Armstrong, I think he's been part of seven or eight management groups. You know, he's leading the charge as a GM this time, just as he did in 2016. But, you know, he was part of building the team that won in Vancouver and building the team that won in Sochi. And so, you know, I think this program has a really clear idea of what it needs to be. And, you know, part of the debate right now, I think that they're having is they recognize, you know, it's going to have been 8 years between best on best Olympic tournaments, you know, by the time we get to Beijing in February, is they've got to turn it over to the kids, but it's sort of how many kids, you know, and how many of the Stamkoses or Tavareses do you want on that team? And, you know, I don't think they have that answer today. They still have, you know, more than a month to evaluate the players and make those final decisions. But, you know, and let's face it, it's always great cooler talk, you know, good debate in your beer league dressing room about who should be on Team Canada. Yeah. Because, you know, there's 20 forwards easily that we could, like, right, make strong cases for in the top 12. There's probably 10 D in the top seven, the even 12 D, you know. One of Darnell Nurse, Morgan Rielly, and Josh Morrissey is probably making the team, which means two of those guys aren't. And those players are all key players on Canadian teams that are having success this year. And so, you know, I'd love to do the job because, you know, my view might always not line up with management's, but it is kind of a tough job because there's not necessarily a right answer. You're just trying to find, I guess, what you feel best with.
I would still love for Canada to be able to submit a B squad. Like, they honestly could. And we talked about that with Craig yesterday, who was a little bit different. I'm not saying that they'd be able to win gold or maybe even win a medal, but they'd be competitive against, you know, the Czech Republics, the Slovakias. No, they got a couple good players.
They could win gold. Like, let's remember the dynamics of a best on best, right? You play three one-game eliminations in a row to win gold. I mean, Finland, that's how Finland can win gold. I mean, they don't have the most talented nation, but they play together. They play hard. You know, they're organized and they can win games. And so Team Canada B could win gold. I have no doubt about that.
Well, you heard it here first.
Oh, my gosh. I love that. Craig, I said it yesterday and Craig was like, hold on.
In conversation with Chris Johnson, TSN Hockey Insider, a columnist for the Toronto Star. And CJ, you actually had an interesting little nugget on insider trading earlier this week about NFTs, the non-fungible tokens, and some sort of relationship with fantasy hockey and the NHLPA. Just wondering if you could explain what exactly this venture is all about.
Well, I would expect everyone to get outside of your comfort zone. Don't think exactly what you think you know, because we're talking about how the world's changing and evolving, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Cole's notes on this are that the simplest way to explain it is that there's a fantasy hockey league that exists. People pay real money for these franchises. And, you know, there's only 32 of those franchises. They draft players, they pay money, and they win money. That's on the line already. And what's going to happen, I believe the announcement's coming later today, is three NHL players. Well, two of them are recent first-round picks. One is an established NHL player. Are now selling their NFTs as part of this league. And so if I owned one of those franchises and I bought that player's NFT, first of all, the money that I won the auction with would go into the pot of the pool. And if that player, say, scores two goals in a game tonight, that player gets some of the money that he might generate for his owner, and the owner gets some of the money. And so, you know, what you're getting by doing this is, first of all, you're giving players another revenue stream, but you're also giving them a different degree of you know, I guess, interactivity with someone who owns them on a fantasy team. I mean, this isn't now just my buddies from Coburg and I randomly drafting, you know, teams of NHL players on paper. I mean, this is, you know, where you could bid and actually kind of have a relationship with that player, and his success is your success. And if you're both, you know, if you're making money, he's making some money. And I think, you know, I think this is where the future is going, honestly. It's very creative. It's starting just with three players, you know, that'll be announced today. But I think the goal eventually is maybe the whole league would sign up for this, or a significant number of players. And, you know, really, to me, what gets me excited is just this idea of the world is changing, you know, and this would have blown my 5-year-old brain when I was like collecting stickers of NHL players, you know what I mean? Or collecting trading cards. You know, this is the next natural generation. Technology allows it to happen. And, you know, so I'm all for that stuff. So that was basically the update. It was hard to put into 30 seconds on insider trading.
Yeah.
Even harder to put 2 minutes here. But, you know, I think it's a good reminder, though, that you know, what we knew of the old world is not going to be too relevant here in the future.
Yeah, NFTs, interesting. Everybody had an NFT this summer.
NFTs, I'm still, you're involved in the crypto space. Is NFT something that you're pretty plugged in on too here, CJ? It kind of goes hand in hand in a way, just based on technology and stuff.
I'm comfortable with it, but I'm not buying it. I mean, essentially, NFTs are digital art, right? I mean, if you want to think about it, you know, I'm not collecting art in my personal life, digital or otherwise, essentially. And so, you know, I'm curious by the space. You know, it's something that people could do. Like, I've seen musicians talk about selling NFTs where you share in some of the earnings of their career. I mean, you basically are part of their team. You know, there's all kinds of cool stuff coming down the line. And so I'm always, like, I'm interested in that. But, you know, I mostly stick to Bitcoin when it comes to my crypto.
Ah, Crypto Chris, I see.
Bitcoin CJ.
Yeah. I don't know if you're a huge golf guy, CJ. The match is going on later today between Brooks and DeChambeau. We were talking before we came on the air, if there was a hockey equivalent, say like a 1v1 pond hockey game, which two NHL players would interest you the most to see go head-to-head?
Well, maybe drawing on the DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka rivalry, maybe I would say like Matthew Tkachuk, Drew Doughty, something like that.
Because cool.
First of all, they're both really funny guys, and they've chirped each other pretty extensively in the media. They've gone at it on the ice. You know, that's the first one that jumps to mind.
Kachuk Muzzin.
You know, I think it'd be fun. You know, and you know, I'm all on Team Koepka. Like, I didn't think he could possibly be likable until he got into this beef with DeChambeau, and it's made him eminently more likable for me because I'm not on Team Bryce. I don't know that much.
It's so funny, the facial expressions. Remember that one video where he walked by? It was hilarious.
Yeah, just the eye roll. It memes for days. There was the meme, someone did it with me, and it was like Haley Salvian walked past, or I walked past, and Haley Salvian had an eye roll, and it's just the memes for days from that one. But that's a really good one. We didn't even think of that. We kind of thought about, you know, Sid versus Ovi, maybe McDavid, Draisaitl, but, I mean, Doughty versus Kachuk, that would be entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah, we were thinking
as long as they're mic'd up, they would have to be mic'd
absolutely.
Up. Part of the appeal isn't to see them fight; it's to see them chirp each other and go head to head that way.
Yeah, that may be the number one answer. That's the number one answer on the board. CJ just blew our minds with it. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. It's always a blast, and we'll catch you back next Friday.
Awesome! Thanks for the big Friday energy. Have a good day, guys.
All right, there he goes, Chris Johnson, TSN insider, columnist for the Toronto Star. Yeah, that's a really good one, actually.
How did we not think of that? We were thinking of players who traditionally,
skill,
historically,
right?
Pitted against one another.
Yeah.
Well, producer Steph brought up an interesting one. McDavid versus Draisaitl.
Yes. I would much rather see Ovi versus Sid. Like, I understand her point is, like, these are two best players in the game. They're teammates. When do you ever get to see these two play each other? Don't you want to watch it? And I'm like, yeah, that's great and all, but, like, are you going to see the chirping and the entertainment factor? Like, this is entertainment at the end of the day. Like, we're going to see chirps and stuff. I would much rather have, like, Alex Ovechkin mic'd up in a one-on-one game against Sidney Crosby. Like, that's the one that I think I would prefer to watch between those two? I don't know. Maybe we should put out a poll.
Or as long as Sid let it fly a little bit.
But I don't. He might. He might be able to. But it's more so Ovi. Like Ovi. Like, I mean, remember when he won the Stanley Cup? Just all the sound bites, all the drops in the world.
We are not going to suck this year.
Oh, we're not going to suck this year.
I love that. That's how I wake up every day with motivation.
Yeah, exactly. You just listen to that.
Not going
to
suck today.
Not going to suck today. Going to have a great day. Thanks, Ovi. Thank you so much. But that'd be really fun to see, actually. Like, I wonder if they could incorporate that into the future into, like, the All-Star Weekend. Have, like, 1v1s. You know, half ice, 1v1, you toss out a goalie, and you toss out a couple of players, and away you go. That'd be really, really cool and really fun to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.